time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum. Now, it's my pleasure this morning for me to have in the studio Pam Monk, a very good friend for many years, but also someone that, you know, has done a lot of great things in our community, especially her family. You know, her family, I call them the first family of New Haven. And, you know, when we start talking about her family, you're going to find out that there's a whole lot of very famous people that are part of her family. And one of the things that they have always tried to do is to connect all the family members from across the country. And we're going to talk about how they've done that and just kept, you know, their heritage and their culture alive, you know, which is a wonderful thing for a lot of us. So how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm blessed by the best.
Wonderful, wonderful. So Pam, tell me, let's talk about it. Now, did you grow up here? Were you born here?
Yes, I was born in New Haven.
Okay. And you guys now I remember Cedar Street, right?
Right.
Now, is that where you guys first got started?
We first got started. Actually, my parents came in 1958. And they came on a train ride, and I'll talk about that, or came on the train.
Right.
And they lived on Lafayette Street, and they also lived on near the hospital. I can't remember the street right now. But then we ended up on Cedar, and that was in 1954. And Jackie was the first child born in house then.
All right. So you grew up, you know, in the hill. Right?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Tell us about growing up in the hill around that time.
Growing up in the hill was really exciting. Like you indicated, at that time, we were right before the riots, yes, in the 60s. And we experienced a lot of things in the hill as far as we attended Prince Street School, and then we went on to Troop because we had to walk a little ways there. We didn't have a bus to take us there. And then we ended up at Lee High School.
Right.
So, as you know, there's no more Lee High and
right,
no more Prince Street School. So we it's really in something that we lived and we continue to bring back different functions so that we can remind the community about how great the hill was.
And you lived right across the street from Lee High School.
I sure did. We used to, we saw it being built, and we used to play in the dirt while it was being built. And
right,
now it's not. It's the nurses. It's owned by Yale,
right,
and it's a nursing school.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And now, and tell me about, you know, what were some of your influences around? I mean, we've always had issues in our community. I mean,
mm-hmm,
you know, people talk about the violence in the community now and all of the things, the drugs. You know, we've always had issues, right? You know,
mm-hmm,
so, however, during that time, it was a little different in terms of the community and how people related to each other. Tell me about your experience in regard to that.
Well, the quote, it takes a village to raise a child, was really, literally, that's what happened back then. And the village or the neighborhood, if you did something around the corner, by the time you got home, your mother knew about it. Also, our home, I have 9 siblings, and my mother had over, she raised over 45 foster kids. So we always had children in our home.
Right.
And our home was considered the neighborhood home. My mother would feed, and it seemed like she had enough to feed everyone. So she was known for her chicken, her famous chicken. And and the church was a, you know, very important part of our upbringing. We had to go to church every Sunday. I mean, even if when we became teenagers or older and we would hang out all night, we still had to get up and go to church on that Sunday morning.
Now, that was Thomas Chapel.
Thomas Chapel. We were
right,
brought up in Thomas Chapel.
Right. And so tell me about, you know, how your religion has really, you know, shaped your life.
Religion has impacted my life tremendously. I wasn't always heavily in the church. I was always around the church. Mm-hmm. But since I lost my son in 2009,
right,
you know, I did not run away from God. I ran to God. Mm. And that's where my strength comes from. The yes. Lord, all, you know, I'm now, I have, he has elevated me in the church. I've gone from being a deaconess, and now I'm the first female trustee in the church. So the things that I heard or I was around didn't know that God was preparing me for a time like this.
Right, right, right. This one guest, I'm speaking with Pam Monk. If you're from New Haven, you know about the monks. And we're talking about her life and her families, and you know, we got a whole lot of history to talk about during this hour. I don't know if I'm gonna have enough time, but we're gonna try to, you know, fit it in. So let's go back to you were going to Lee High School,
yes,
right? And what were you thinking about in terms of like your career when you got to around your junior senior year? Tell me about that.
And that's interesting too, because when I became a junior, I got serious about school. Prior to that, I was the typical ninth grader. I played around. I joked around and didn't care too much about school. I was a good student. I kept a C, you know, but then I knew, and everyone knew I could do better. And the way we were raised, our parents had us, I won't say competing against each other. Like at the family table, we sat down at 6 o'clock and Dad would quiz us and ask us questions like, who was Ponce de Leon? And my sister Marcella, the Brainiac, she would always answer first. But I knew the answer, but she would get to it first. So I wasn't really the greatest student at that time. But when I became a junior at Lee High, we had really great mentors there. That's what I would call them. Dr. Schreck, he was the principal. Louie Harper yeah. was there. And Mr. Toles, they called them the odd couple. Mm. And they really stayed behind us. They knew our families. They came to our family events. And Mr. Schreck told me at my senior year, when you go away to college, you come back, I have a job waiting for you. And he did just what he said he would do. When I graduated from Southern, I came back to the same school I had just graduated from 4 years ago, and I was on hall duty with a teacher that I could not get along with. So now she's my colleague.
Wow.
And so I had to switch hats real quickly, and I probably was one of the youngest teachers on staff.
Right.
So I started teaching in 1977 at Lee High School. So I graduated from Lee. 4 years later, came back, and I taught there.
And isn't that wonderful? I mean, I think that, you know, sometimes as young people, we need motivation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm quite sure that, you know, by having that offer being given to you, that, hey, you've graduated, you come back here, I'm going to have a job for you.
Yes.
That fueled you, right?
Yes, it did. Yes, yeah, it did. And then for the person to be a man of his word.
Yes.
That was, you know, because a lot of people say stuff and they tell you, give you all these great promises and they don't fulfill them.
Right.
But I can say that Mr. Schreck, and even at our 30th reunion at Lee High, he was still, you know, Mr. Schreck.
Right.
You know.
So tell me about teaching. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me about that first day that you walked into that classroom with those kids and you were teaching. Tell me about that first day.
It was really and like you're saying, the first day I was like 21 and some of the students were 20 or 21. So I was in the classroom, and then I had students that were family. Mm. So that was the other issue, because right. I'm a special education teacher, and you know, you don't have many classes for the special ed. So you have a quarter here at Lee High. They were one, I think, in each house. So okay. It was four houses. So I was in one of the South House. And again, I had a good support system. One of the teachers took me under her wing, and her name was Virginia Brooks. And she started mentoring me. She didn't know she was mentoring me, but she was like leading me and guiding me and giving me, you know, suggestions. It was really, I'm very creative, so I had to think out the box a lot.
Right.
And then with special ed, you also individualize the attention.
Yes.
You have to differentiate the instruction so that the students are able to succeed, because that's my one of my philosophies. You know, you can, everybody can learn. They might not learn the way you learn, but they learn. They can learn. And so you find out if they're auditorial learner or they're visual learner. Most of our special ed students are hands on. Mm. They're kinesthetic. They, you know, need things that they can make or and see a finished product, and they feel good about that. And you do too. You know, when you see that right now with one of the projects we're working on in my class is a business plan.
Yes.
Something that they can apply to their, you know, everyday life. And when we talk about it, you know, I tell my sister, select something that you like. And most of the kids would say sneakers and clothes of that nature. But then they start talking about how they want to have a business where they can afford the sneakers, and they can be able to create and make different colors, different styles. And so now they're going to have a finished product when they, you know, if they do it, that's fine. But if not, they okay, because they were able to complete this project.
Right. I'm Juan Castillo. I'm speaking with Pam Monk. Of course, you know, she is part of the Monk family. And, you know, we're talking about her life. And, you know, and in fact, you know, I've watched their family here in New Haven. I'm so very proud to be called a family member also.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, and so now... Tell me about your mom and your dad. You know, let's go, because I mean, I know you're very much into the historical mm-hmm. aspect of your family, and it's a story of America. It's a story of an African American family, you know, who from the South came north, and you know, and was able to, you know, accomplish so many things, you know. Talk about that a little bit.
Yes, my family migrated from North Carolina. My dad came first. Let me back up. Where he met my mom, they met in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Dad lived in Newton Grove, North Carolina, which was about 65 miles from Rocky Mount. And he met my mom at a juke joint. My mother loved to dance, and she was there dancing with her sister, two sisters. But she was a little younger, so she wasn't a drinker. But they took and left and needed a ride home. And my dad gave all three of them a ride home. But they left her to talk to him and say, well, Olivia, she'll pay you kindly. So that, so we always laugh about that. But she was like, I don't have any money. He said, well, will you go out on a date with me? So from that brought this large family. They had four children in North Carolina, where Thelonious Monk was born. My parents owned that home. It was on 124 Dunn Street in Rocky Mount. And Thelonious was born there. My grandfather owned the home, and my father bought it from him. But we eventually lost that home through eminent domain. Mm. They took the home because of the city of Rocky Mount needed it for other reasons. After that, my parents, before they took the home, they came to Connecticut. And that was in like 1958. And my father came first. My uncle found a job here at, it was called Grace New Haven instead of Yale New Haven. Mm-hmm. He found a job there, and he told my dad about it. And dad came to Connecticut and started working. And after that, he sent for my mom. And she came on a train with four children. And that was my oldest sister, Edith, my brother, Conley, my sister, Olivia, Chris, and my brother, Crony. And so after they reached New Haven, they came and found out that the place that they were going to live at wasn't accepting all these kids. Mm. So they had to find another location. And that's when it went to Oak Street. That was the street I couldn't remember.
Right.
And they lived there for a short while, and then they lived on Lafayette. And shortly thereafter, they, like you said, they worked hard, and they built Well, they worked hard and moved to Cedar Street. And that's where we, the rest of the children were born. Jackie was born, Marcella, and myself, and my baby brother, Gary. My mom also wanted to stay home to take care of the girls because we started to become of age. So she started taking care of foster children. Mm. And I'm thinking Representative Dillon indicated that my mother was one of the first emergency housing. She would call her when they needed to house girls that were homeless or were being battered. And my mother would open up the house because we had a three family house, and she would house these girls.
Wow.
My mother was a very, very dominant, strong African-American woman, and she did not take any mess. And my dad worked two jobs to take care of us. So where she was home, he was working. So he worked at Seamus Rubber Company for 25 years and Yale New Haven Hospital for 25 years until he became ill. He had a stroke, and he suffered with the Parkinson's disease until his demise. But both of them were, there weren't many families that had two parents in the home.
Right.
People thought we had money, but it was just that we were hard workers. And they taught, my mother raised the girls like boys. We all were told, you know, we had to take care of each other, look after your sister and your brother. Parents, you know, my mother and father never had to be institutionalized or put in a home. My mother, you know, had rehab here and there, and dad too. But my mother took care of him, and we took care of our mother. And what we did before she died, we all, my mother says, eight of you and it's only two of us. And eight of you can't take care of two of us. And so before she died, there's 7 days in a week, and we all took a day and took care of her.
Wow.
Until she became ill and
right.
And she died.
Now, you have been sort of, well, you and is it Marcella?
Mm-hmm.
You guys are the ones that are kind of took the torch as far as maintaining the family history, right?
Well, I'm the one with the family history. Marcella is doing a lot with the musical, appreciation part of it.
Talk to me about. Because, you know, a lot of us, you know, and that's something big today. You know, mm-hmm. people are looking at the heritage and the lineage, right?
Yes.
And just so that I let folks know, of course, I'm talking to Pam Monk. We're talking about the Monks here. You got to know the Monks. You're from New Haven. And, you know, she mentioned earlier, you know, about, you know, Thelonious Monk. Now, you probably recognize that name, right? You know, a giant in jazz, you know, who revolutionized jazz. And, you know, he was a Monk. And then you also have Art Monk.
Yes.
Who played for the Washington Redskins.
Yes.
Right? You know, so he's part of your family.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the history. And I'm a history buff. So
okay, awesome.
Okay.
Well, what happened, and again, I mentioned my son had passed in 1909. Did I say that right? 2009.
Right.
And I needed something to keep me grounded.
Yes.
And prior to that, my dad and I used to go all the way to Newton Grove and research our family history. Now, this is before the internet. So we couldn't go to ancestry.com.
Yes.
And we would go, and it was something too for my father and I to just bond and do some things together.
Yes.
So we would jump in the car, drive all the way to Newton Grove, like I indicated, it's in North Carolina, but a small town, but 500 people in the population. And we would go to the county houses and just go, and I don't know if they can do that here in New Haven, and we would just say anything in Monk. We would pick up, choose the land records, the death, but everything they're doing on TV now with Louis Gates and all that, did that, you know, with our family history. But we just didn't, you know, think to do put it on TV like he did.
Right.
But we commend him for that. So what happened? I started doing that. Okay, so when my son passed, I had like 20 years of boxes that I had been accumulating with all the death records and the marriages and so on. And people started calling me, like Robin Kelly. He wrote the autobiography. Did I say right? The biography of Thelonious Monk.
Okay.
Robin Kelly. And they started asking questions about the family history. And I started saying, well, if they can do that, I can do it.
Right.
And that's what happened. All roads lead to Newton Grove is about the family history. And this is 350 pages of family history. But what's amazing about it is that we're able to talk about the white and the black monks. And by doing this and the internet, I guess my name showed up someplace, and one of the white monks contacted me. His name was Matthew Monk. He actually was a descendant of the slave owner. Mm. And he wanted to know if he can come and meet me. And I told him that so we were getting ready to have a family reunion here, because we have one every third weekend in July. And he said, yes, I would like to come. So he did. He came and he met the family. And from that, New Haven Register wrote an article. And they wrote an article about us meeting. Now, this was, again, amazing to me, because if you hear about these other meetings between the descendants of the slaves and descendants of the slave owners, the descendants of the slaves make the initial contact. Right. But here is one of the descendants of the slave owner making the contact. So it had to take a lot of courage for him to do that. And then he came to my backyard. He did not, you know, he didn't know what he was coming into, but he stepped in and he came to Thomas Chapel Church to our anniversary. So the city of the New Haven Register featured us in an article. So once they did that, and I just said Martin Luther King would be proud, because he said he had a dream that descendants of slave owners and slave would come together. So from that, People Magazine picked up our article.
Okay.
And they they wanted to write an article about us. Actually, they gave us the centerfold, and we were flown out back to the plantation. And this was so spiritual about this. When we got back to the plantation, we both were on the plane. They took us both back. When we arrived at the plantation, all of his siblings were there, and all of my eight siblings were there.
Wow.
And we all, you know, they all came together. We talked. We went out to eat. And this is after the photo shoot, because the photo shoot took all day. And we went out to eat. And then we said we were going to go to where the slave owner's grave was, because they never seen it. And I've never seen that.
Wow.
So we went to the slave owner's grave. And when we got there, it was night. And all we had was the headlights of the cars. And then one of them said, well, what do we do now? I think it was one of the brothers of Matthews. And someone said, well, when we pray. And someone else said, we sing. And we held hands and we started singing Amazing Grace. And the harmony was just amazing. And, you know, Marcella being a singer. And then what it was, we matched up. It's like you had one that was a teacher, one was a social worker. We were all in people professions. And it was just amazing how we all, our DNA came out that way.
So question, mm-hmm. you were able to actually trace your family from the plantation straight to your mother and father?
Yes, that's what I did.
Can you tell me a little bit about that history?
Yes. I was able to, in this picture, and I know they can't see us on the radio,
right,
but this is one of my great-great-grandfather. His name is Hinton Monk Cole.
Okay.
And he was, in the census records, because you know African Americans didn't appear in census records until after Civil War, so the 1870s. So in the 1870s, it showed that he was 17 years old, and his name was Cole. But when he got married, so we could have been a Coles, but when he got married, he changed his name to Monk. What happened is dad's name was Monk. And his mom, she was a Tuscarora Indian, and her name was Cole. And typically, the Indians took they were parenting of their child. So with the slave, the plantations bordered the Monk plantation and the Coal plantation, and they used they you know bordered each other, so each of the slaves got together with whoever or whatever. Right. But this is what happened with him. So his name was Hinton Cole, and he married Sarah Williams. So he was born in 1852. So the Civil War was over in 1865.
And he was a slave.
He was a slave, and okay. He was on the Archibald Monk plantation.
I see.
And so that's where. So when we just went last week,
right?
The train ride, it took us. We took everybody back to the plantation,
right?
And we took pictures, and we went inside, and we were able to see that because it's a museum.
Wow.
Because Archibald was very prominent in that town. He, even in his will, he said that I don't even have to get a witness because my signature is so well known.
And so after the Civil War, mm-hmm. he becomes free.
He becomes free.
And what happens?
He becomes free. He also, the next census record shows that he's married and has a child.
Okay.
But he becomes very, I won't say prominent, but he's a landowner.
Okay.
He starts buying land, and he buys a lot of land.
Right.
So he becomes pretty wealthy with wow. the, you know, if you want to say a slave, come out of slavery, and then
yes.
you purchase land.
Yes.
And that trickled on down to my grandfather, who was also a landowner. He owned over 300 acres of land. And that is something that my grandfather was, it was said that he allegedly committed suicide.
Mm.
But we still challenge that because we think that, he, the way the gun, they said it was a rifle. They didn't have, you know, ballistics or whatever. They didn't do those type of reports back then. And it was just like a black person that killed themselves back in those
right,
days.
Right.
They were trying not to get be killed.
Exactly.
So we went back. We tried to find out records of the killing. We have
right.
the newspaper article. That's all in the book.
Right.
But it... He lost, you know, all his land, and we think that was one of the reasons that he was killed because
so,
of his
so,
land.
So now, Thelonious Monk, tell me how your connection, the family connection through him.
Okay. So Thelonious' dad
yeah.
and my grandfather are brothers.
Okay.
So it was like my dad was first cousins with Thelonious.
I see.
And the same with Art. Art's dad
uh-huh.
and my dad were first cousins.
And they... And now Thelonious and his family stayed south, and then he came north?
Thelonious' family came north when his mom, they came when Thelonious, I think, was 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So she brought him and the other two siblings. They moved south, moved north. But Uncle Thelonious was... he came at one time, but the story was told that he was hit in the head by a 2x4. He had some type of fight,
mm-hmm.
and it sent he ended up in Goldsboro or Cherry Hill Hospital.
Right.
So he really they I won't say they left him there, but that's where he stayed until his demise. But the mother stayed in and raised. She raised her children on her own.
Right, right. And now Thelonious had a son.
He, yes, T.S., yeah.
T.S.,
that's my cousin. We call him Toot. That's the family name.
Yes.
And he did come here, and
yes,
he gave us an interview here. He's living now in New Jersey. And like I said, Marcella does more with the musical part of the family.
Right.
And they, but they do stay in touch. They come down and be part, you know, they have attended some of our family activities.
Right.
And they are very supportive. Again, we just went to, because you're talking about two, when we went on this train ride, one of our focuses, we wanted to erect a monument or a marker in memory of his grandfather,
yes.
Uncle Thelonious.
Okay.
And that's because he never had a proper burial.
Mm.
Duke used his body as a cadaver. And so we buried him, or we interned him right next to his father.
Right.
Wow. So he's on it now. He's in the Cole Cemetery, family cemetery. Wow. So, but Toots doing great things. He's playing, you know, the drums where his dad played the keyboard,
yes.
And he also started the Monk Institute, where they're training young individuals how to be awesome musicians.
That's in Chicago.
It's in, where I know it's in California.
Oh, it's in California, okay.
Yeah, I know they have different, what you call them, concerts, or I know they're supposed to be at the White House in the next week or so, something.
Right.
It's coming up.
Juan Castillo, which I'm speaking with Pam Monk, we're talking about her life and the history of her family, which is actually the history of America, you know, in so many ways, you know, and we've been talking about her going back and tracing her roots all the way to the plantation, you know, and you know, she's wrote a book. She's been in they've been in People magazine, New Haven Register, did all kinds of articles, and now she's on the radio with me talking about this wonderful family. And now let's get back to you a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you become a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and then you also have done a lot of stuff around here, right? You know, and you know, because your family's about entertainment,
mm-hmm.
right? So tell me about the other stuff.
You know? Okay,
the other stuff, right?
Yes, and to piggyback off of that,
yes,
I am, or was said, I'm a jack of all trades.
Absolutely.
So I can almost do everything. I won't say I'm and I'm a jack of all trades. And a queen of some, so I'll say it like that. And so we can go, you know, with the music. I do, you know, I do play the piano. I play for the church. I sing a little. We have a gospel singing group with our family. It's a multi-generational choir. The Monk Singers. That's something that our parents, my father wanted us to stay together.
Yes.
So a family that prays together stays together.
And sings together.
So we do this, and it's a commitment. It's like an obligation. The kids come back from all over, like you said, and for this every year. With that being said, we also had a karaoke business, and the karaoke business is very successful.
Yes,
had a platform for singers to come out and perform.
First one here, because karaoke was not a black thing. So I just want to let everybody know, you know, yes. Pam started that when nobody. What is karaoke?
Right,
you know?
Right.
So so you've been doing that for years. You
for
know,
years.
And some great singers have come through.
Yes. When I began, and I have to give credit, in Hollywood, Paul Henderson, he helped me get the equipment together. And once he did that, when someone said to me, do you know what karaoke is? I never heard of it. Yeah. And I went and sat at one of the clubs and listened to it. And I was like, I can do this. So I started buying speakers and different pieces because I couldn't buy all of it at one time. And once I did get all the equipment, Earl Whitaker came into one of the places I was working at. Everything was falling apart. Hollywood was supposed to be there to help me. He fell asleep and didn't wake up. And Earl, you know, he said, what's this, spaghetti? Because all my wires were crossed over and everything. So he helped me. And from that point on, we built the dynasty. I can't say I did it by myself.
And pick up the fluid.
Yes. Oh, well, Fluid came on a little later. Earl was first.
Yeah,
and when Fluid, as an MC, and no one can replace it, can't replace Fluid. He is just, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, so Fluid. And then the other ones started coming. My nieces helped me out, Yvonne and Libby, Olivia. And then we had great people like Tasha Kelly. She went on to perform at different things like plays. It was Marvin Gaye's life story, and she was a part of that. But she sung like, what's her name? Patti LaBelle. And then we started doing competitions. We would take the whole group, it was like 10 of us, and go to Delaware. And these singers would put out their best. We have Cordell Pemberton and Terry. I don't want to call names and forget anyone, Terry Rogers, and they are still doing, you know, carrying it on.
Right.
Ella Gary, she's now down at Jackie. So they pretty much branched off and started their own businesses.
Wonderful. Some of the other things. I know you got Liz over here.
Yeah. Well, you pretty much cover most of everything.
Yeah.
The other thing is on the fashion shows. We used to do a lot of fashion shows.
Yes.
And still, with where I work, we still train. Because fashion shows, a lot of people just see it as fashion. But I see it as social development or self-esteem.
Yes.
We have students that occasionally don't feel good about themselves. And for one day, you can dress them up and tell them that, you know, everybody's looking at you. You are the star.
Attention.
Attention, yes.
Attention.
A lot of attention.
Positive.
Mm-hmm, positive. And knowing that they look good. And it's amazing because a lot of people think, oh, people booing them. No, they don't do that. They be cheering them on. Like, come on. You know.
Right.
So it's really nice. So we are still doing fashion shows for the schools.
And some of your other siblings, mm-hmm. right? You know, Jackie, of course, mm-hmm. You know, we lost Clarence Roberts. Mm-hmm. You know, her wonderful husband, who on his own, you know, overcame jail mm-hmm. to become mm-hmm. principal.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
Jackie
yes.
Robinson, and then in addition to that, you know, Jackie, you know, has overcome, you know, breast mm-hmm. cancer.
Yes,
and she's now mm-hmm. has a organization. Talk
yes.
about that.
Yes, Jackie's a 2-time breast cancer survivor.
Yes.
And God has really done great things for her. She's an elder at the church. And now she's actually working at Riverside as a paraprofessional.
Wonderful.
So where what the devil meant for her harm, God has turned it around for her good.
Great.
Jackie looks good, and she goes around now speaking as an ambassador for cancer. She just recently spoke on Capitol Hill or in Hartford on the behalf of cancer survivors.
Right.
She does a lot in the community, like you said. She reaches out and helps those that need some type of support. So her group is called the Nubian Sisters Support Group.
Right, right.
And at one time it was just for the sisters, but they do embrace males too.
Right.
And she has a a program, or she does it like once a year with a ball,
mm-hmm.
and she crowns a king and queen.
Nice.
For, you know, their
wonderful. Now let's get back to your life.
Okay.
I mean, you know, so you met the love of your life, right?
Yes,
you know,
I did.
And, you know, and you all know him here mm-hmm. in the city, Larry Kelly.
Yes.
You know, who, you know, great star here mm-hmm. here in the city, and went mm-hmm. on to play at Syracuse.
Yes, he did.
Right? You know, talk about that.
Oh, well, Larry's my high school sweetheart.
Your high school sweetheart.
Yes, we met at Lee High School, and he went on to, like you said, play ball at Syracuse his first year. He was like the rookie of the year.
Yes.
He's done some great things as far as now he's the coach over at Career,
mm-hmm.
and he's won many championships. He's brought those boys from,
yes.
you know, zeros to heroes.
Yes.
He's still, we have 4 children. My son, like I indicated, he's deceased, and our oldest daughter, she's a teacher also. She teaches in South Carolina.
Wow.
She teaches elementary ed. Our second daughter, she's a teacher, and she teaches English, and she's now going for she's graduating May with her administrative degree. And then our youngest daughter, she's a speech pathologist.
Wow.
So God has really shined on our children, and we're just really grateful for it.
And I mean, that journey,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, it's interesting because you had said, you know, when you lost your son, you're trying to find yourself. It was a very tough time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole city got behind you and Larry.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, we put our arms around you.
Yes, you did.
We knew it was difficult. And then you found something,
mm-hmm.
You know, Larry still had the basketball and mm-hmm. the kids.
Yes.
And that kept him grounded, you mm-hmm. know, somewhat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's amazing, mm-hmm. you know, and I know for you, because of education, right?
Right.
And you decided to go in that direction, and, you know, and some of your kids and, mm-hmm. and some of the other folks in your family have gone through education, to go from, for you to really go back
mm-hmm.
and go at a time, and trace your family at a time when you weren't even allowed to read,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to now,
yes,
you
yeah.
know, being able to do all that. Tell mm-hmm. me how you feel about that.
Well, and you're talking about the tracing and doing the family history. We also are doing cemetery preservation.
Okay.
So you would think that with me going through what I did with my son, that that's the furthest thing from my mind.
Yeah.
But what we want is that our, and I say we, the Monk Council is my four of us, we want to be able to have our the resting place, the final resting place for our families, our kids. Like you said, what's this about? It's for the future generations. They don't have to go back and research like I did.
Mm.
That's what it is for. And this train ride we just had was for them. It wasn't for us. We embraced, we had only 20 to go on this time. We've had, this is our third train ride. So we did it biannually. And we wanted the kids to come down, see where my mother's buried in the South. She asked us to bring her back.
Mm.
So she's in Rocky Mount, and my dad is buried in the family plot in Newton Grove.
Wow.
And it's called the Monk Cemetery.
Mm.
So there was a place for my mother there, too. But my brother died before my mother. So my mother gave my brother her plot. So she's next to her mother.
Right.
But it was, this is what the history is all about. It's all what it's to for the future generations. It's not, you know, we went back and it was a struggle finding out the information, like you just said.
Yes.
We had a DNA done. And so we had it with Gary and we found out that our DNA traced back to Cameroon. So we were able to go back to Africa. We want to take and do a little more tracing, pay a little more money, and you get a better sample.
Right.
But it's something that every family should do. And again, being a teacher, I have done this with my students. And it's very disheartening when you find out some of them can't even go past their grandparents.
Well, what's interesting about what you said about this, you know, this whole, you know, thing that you do, you
mm-hmm.
know, as far as history of your family, is that, you know, so often, I mean, for years we talked about, well, if we teach African American history to our kids, then they're gonna feel proud
mm-hmm.
of what the ancestors were all about. So that will serve as a motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, but wow, you know, for kids to know about their own family
mm-hmm.
history, that's not something that's not being taught in school.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
No question that has to have an effect on when it's time for me to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's why they find other families. They embrace the gangs and all the other families that they feel like, oh, this is my boy. This is, you know, because the person, you know, gave them what they wanted or some attention, like we talked about earlier.
Right.
They're looking for love in all the wrong places.
Right.
But family, and then you have some families that are not tight. They know their family, but sisters are not talking to sisters and brothers not talking.
Right.
But something probably small, could be money, could be, you know, even when they go to look at things of when someone dies and they have to split up the family heirs and things of that nature, you run into a lot of
issues.
There you go.
Good word. To say the least.
So it's like you have to know that is the act of the enemy. That's the enemy wants you to mm-hmm. be against each other, and
right.
you know, and that's the first thing the enemy came against from the beginning of time, when, you know, Abel and Cain, you know. So we have to, as a community, our family, learn how to just recognize that. And when you recognize that, you got to bind it up and just say, you know, I love you. My father, this is what he used to make us do. When we used to argue as siblings, he said, now hug. And that was the hardest thing to do, was hug. So I think that's what families need to do more, is hug.
Right. Before you leave, you know, what's the best advice you ever got and from who?
You know, I was really thinking about that, and I can't, you know, say anybody else but my mother.
Yes.
My dad was a man of very few words.
Yeah, he's
small stature, but when he spoke, he spoke.
Yes.
But my mom was more or less the disciplinarian. But she, I was more like her than I ever knew. And one time I had my, I was starting, you know, I had the karaoke business going and the CDs and everything, you know, being a DJ, you know what I'm talking about, was in my car. And someone broke in my car and just took all the CDs. And my, you know, I just burst into tears. I was upset, you know, and I said to my mother, it's all over, it's all over. And she said to me, she said, it's not over till God says it's over. And so I would leave that with anybody that's going through.
Yes.
Don't give up. Don't give out. It's not over till God says it's over.
Right. Well, Pam, you know how I feel about you.
Yes, and you know how I feel about you.
And I want to thank you for coming. You know, it's been inspiring this morning.
Right.
You know, and please come back because I know there's more history for you to come back and talk about.
Yes.
You know,
well, I have two more books, so
right.
I don't, you know, I'm going to leave them with you. But
okay.
One is a coloring book
for
the family, and then the other is this is a comic book.
Oh, you got a comic book too? Wow.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
So it's about the family history.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm Juan Castillo. Thank you so much for coming this morning.
Thank you for inviting me.
All righty. This is The Electric Drum. I know you've been inspired. I have been inspired. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, and I will see you next week on The Electric Drum.
Okay.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.